This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Okay, we are live. Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On today's show, I have a very special guest. He comes to us from Australia. His name is J.J. Dawson, and I followed him. He's written excellent articles on his Substack, which is J.J. Dawson, Dawson spelled dawson.substack.com. He's written excellent articles there on the pandemic. So I was following him on that, and then just something popped up just the other day that I was reading. The title of this article, we're going to talk about this issue. The trans issue is not a petty culture war clash. It is everything. And I agree with them. And then this whole nightmare happened in Nashville, Tennessee, with all these people shot and this activist raiding a Christian school. But there's a lot going on. Like, I am actually getting annoyed because my social media is so full of people posting things about these trans people and the trans activism, and so much is going on. I just was look on my Twitter, and there was something about in Australia, where JG is from, about this whole thing where the parents are letting their children choose their gender. They're calling them babies. They're not babies, but letting them do that. But I've done another show with Roberta Glass. We covered transgenderism and just kind of the issues, but it seems like things are ramping up. So I invited JJ on, and he's going to talk more about his article. You can find him again at jjdawson.substack.com. So JJ, welcome to the show.
Hi, William. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Excellent. So for people who may not have heard your writing, you've written on a variety of different subjects. Can you kind of talk about your writing career and what led you up to this most recent article just published March 26th, The Trans Issue is Not a Petty Culture War Clash?
Yeah, sure. I've been a writer, I would say, for most of my life. My mother was an English teacher. The talent came naturally to me, and then she nurtured it along through school. I fell into a marketing and advertising career out of university, and that really ramped up for me around 2012, which, funnily enough, is right around the time that these culture war issues began to manifest themselves. So I got into that industry as a very naive young man, right around the time that we started hearing about toxic masculinity and racial equity and things like that. And I was working for a university at the time, and I can recall being swept up in the whole thing and having a feeling that, you know, while I didn't really like the whole kind of woke direction of things, that, you know, we were sort of at the progressive spear tip of things. And, you know, we were enlightened, and we were a society that was tolerant and trying to do the right thing. But as the madness increased, there really formed a disconnect in my mind. The cognitive dissonance that the narrative demanded of us was becoming too much for me. And I became quite disillusioned sort of through the mid part of my stint at that university, and ended up leaving to join the private sector because I thought there would be less of the wokeism there. And I went and worked for a big financial services company, where things were slightly better for a while. But in the last few years, the same ideology has crept into the private sector. And we can talk about all that. We can touch on the whole ESG thing, which comes down from the big asset management firms. But, you know, ramping up under Trump and then sort of spinning out of control into this utter lunacy that we saw through COVID and the vaccines and everything. I became, one might say, radicalized. That's probably what our detractors would say. But, you know, I prefer to think of it as simply just waking up. You know, I started looking into things. I started researching things. And the scam of the whole thing, the falsehood of the entire narrative became clear to me. And I realized, look, what I'm doing in my day job pays the bills, but it's not fulfilling me. In fact, it's gradually crushing me. So I said, well, what am I good at? What can I do? Well, writing's what I'm good at. So I'm going to start up a Substack and just go from there, see where it takes me. I'm going to write about what I think. I'm going to write about what I see going on. And that was about a year ago. And that brings us to today. So that's a quick summary of my writing career, if you want to call it that.
Right, and you've covered a lot of different topics too. You've covered COVID. You've kind of made this trans. You've talked about some of your personal life. So you've put out a substantial amount of material in a year.
Yes, I think it's about one article a week I'm managing. I would like to do more in the future. Obviously, when you're working a full-time job, there's only a limited amount of time. But I'm quite pleased with the amount of work I've put out. And as you said, I do try to cover a variety of topics. I don't like to get pinned down and pigeonholed into one specific area, although most of what I write certainly leans towards the current political climate, the culture war. And I've been particularly interested and disgusted and horrified by what happened through COVID and what they did to us with the lockdowns and then subsequently with the vaccine mandates. I was heavily involved in the protest movement here in Melbourne the summer before last. So that was the winter before last for you guys. You know, we were out marching in the streets every weekend. We had hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. The mainstream media didn't cover it. You know, if they did, they would say a few thousand protesters. But, you know, we regularly had hundreds of thousands in the streets. And you saw that same thing around the world. And the media just didn't report on any of it. So that really sort of, I found that quite inspirational, and it was around that time I started my writing. But you know, I think that vaccine tyranny really did wake a lot of people up, and we're witnessing something really incredible right now. It's disturbing, but there are positive aspects to it in the mass awakening that we're seeing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And there are somewhat similarities between what happened during COVID and this whole trans issue. It's this enforcement of a rigid ideology. You cannot disagree. You have to do the lockdowns. You have to do this. You have to get the shot. Mandates. Right now, it's ramped up so much with the trans issue that if you step out of line, you're in trouble. And you mentioned in your article, and you can see it if people are watching on Rockfin, you can see this thing that just happened on Saturday the 25th where this woman's rights campaigner went out to just say, let women speak. And she was like attacked. It was rabid. It was like a bunch of rabid pack animals, right?
She was physically assaulted. She had, as you can see in the photo there, she had, I think it was tomato soup poured all over her. But you watch the footage of her trying to exit the event. She was mobbed by hundreds of angry, mostly men. She was assaulted. Her security detail was assaulted, and this is what led me to write the article. The blatant doublethink, to use the Orwellian term, the doublethink that people must subject their minds to in order to simultaneously believe, as the progressive left does, that women are oppressed and as such are a victim class and must be lifted up and supported and given special treatment. But at the same time, that a woman who is trying to stand up for herself and all other women must be silent and submissive and subservient to the men at this event who wish her to be silent and who will literally resort to physical violence to enforce that. And that the mainstream media is running with that narrative that this woman should not be allowed a platform. There were even calls in the New Zealand media for her to not be allowed a visa to enter the country to speak about women's rights. So what we are dealing with here is a large segment of the public, and not just in New Zealand, but around the world, who have successfully reprogrammed their minds, surrendered their rational thinking, given up their ability to think critically, and deployed instead the exact thing that George Orwell described in 1984 when he wrote about this thing called doublethink, which is, to quote Orwell, it's the power of holding two contradictory beliefs in one's mind simultaneously and accepting both of them, which is exactly what is going on with this transition.
Right. So these so-called trans, they're men in drag. I would call them transvestites. They are the ones in this thing who are saying they're women oppressing a woman, a real woman, from just saying, I don't agree with this. And I mean, it's incredible too, because this kind of trans, the language is very Orwellian. Understanding Orwell is critical, not just the language, but the what happens to your mind. Yeah,
absolutely.
Because I've done the show with Roberta Glass. Her stats were that all these trans people, 90% of them still have their penis and testicles. So
we know that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just, some people may not be that clear. These are fully functional males with women's clothing on. And that's really what they're saying. They're women, right?
They're saying they're women. They used to be referred to as transvestites. And let me just say off the bat, you know, I don't have a problem if someone wants to say, okay, I'm a woman now, I'm going to dress like a woman, I'm going to act like a woman. Hell, I might even, you know, if I'm in polite company and someone's presenting as a woman, I might even be persuaded to use the pronouns that they desire. I might even be persuaded to say, okay, she, this woman, you know what I mean?
Yes.
What I object to is the ideology of it, is being forced, being intimidated into saying that you believe the person is legitimately a woman.
Right.
You're like, we can all be polite to someone, you know, to accommodate them in a one-on-one situation or in a group situation, but this is different from that. You know, it is a top-down ideology that everyone must adhere to. And if they don't, they're ostracized, they're attacked, they're canceled.
Right. And I mean, they called it deadsplaining. So if you get their name wrong, it's like an insult to the deaf. Like the language around it is so intense. So this enforcement where your, you know, social, your life, your job, everything is dependent upon you getting these names right. You could literally get it wrong unintentionally. Like that's what the whole thing. Like, are you man or woman? I got to be careful. And so,
well, it's misgendering. Misgendering. You know, that's the new speak term for it. Misgendering.
It is new speak. Yeah. It's a newspeak, and it's very incredible, like, to think this, like, and the damage that's been done by allowing this has been devastating towards actual women. Like, that's the whole thing, is like these guys with testicles who have testosterone going in their body are competing against.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Women who do not have that benefit, they have such a huge advantage outside of, you know, how they were born and stuff like that. But just having testosterone alone, they're just destroying women's sports. It's really a disgrace. It's embarrassing for the adults who've allowed this to happen, but they've been intimidated. They are scared. I mean, yeah, it's incredible that they've gotten this far, to me.
It has destroyed women's sports. I did see, I think there was a positive development, I think, last week. There was an international sporting body that has now, I think, banned this. But I mean, that's one victory for women amongst an ocean of defeats at this point. And I think the sport thing is the most obvious manifestation of it. Right. There's a much larger issue here is that when you, and for me, this is all part of a broader agenda to completely uncouple our, to completely decouple our society from everything that has underpinned it to this point. So the family unit, and even simply the most basic fundamental of reality, which is male and female. It's the basis of our existence on this planet, and without which the species cannot perpetuate. So if you want to look at the family unit, and to drill down to be even more specific, men and women as the fundamental basis for reality, this is what they are trying to undo with this narrative. And I think this is the point of my article, once you have undone the fabric of reality, you are, as the party was in 1984, you then control reality, you control the present, you control the past, you control the future, you control everyone's minds. Because if there is no reality other than what the party said, then there is no truth. And if there's no truth, there is only what the party says.
Right. No, it really is. It's an assault on reality itself. It's like a mind war. And I think that's what people caught up in this whole situation may not see, the broader political, sociological intent behind it, is that they're just making people bow down. It's almost kind of like a humiliation thing. Like, this is a man or woman, and you can be anything. There's a sinister element to it, just like you said. And I think it goes into the whole kind of depopulation. That's another similarity between COVID and stuff, is this whole assault upon human biology. This is, to me, another one of those assaults. I agree with you. It's about being a man or woman. Yeah.
I think whichever one of these issues you look at, whether it's the vaccines, whether it's the lockdowns, whether it's ESG, whether it's the climate change thing, or whether it's this trans thing, you can trace it back to one fairly basic agenda, which to me appears to be the decoupling of our society from its traditions, and the the creation of a single consciousness, which is based purely on dogma, as opposed to facts. And there is the only way that you can create that is to demand complete submission. Right. And that's a common factor across the lockdowns, across the vaccines, across the trans issue, across the climate change issue. Anyone who departs from the narrative becomes a heretic. And you know, this is classic tyrannical behavior, which you can see throughout history. That the tactics are exactly the same. They've just applied some slightly different terms of reference.
Right. And the language is also very, like, if you don't agree with me, you should be killed. Like, they're talking about killing people, and like, it's like a war, it's genocide. There's a trans genocide, so they're defensive, they have to fight back. There was a guy on social media today saying it's war. So the intensity of maintaining this kind of doublethink, this irrationality, is also astonishing. It's why are people getting into this kind of obvious disreality? It's really I've never seen anything like it. And it's only getting worse. Like, it's only going down. And I think even a part of it too is this whole, you know, choose your gender, or what's the new speak of it? Gender affirming surgery, right? That's another way to depopulate, another way to lessen the gene pool, because all those women have their, or whatever happens, they have, they're scarred for life. They're not going to have children.
Getting back to the depopulation issue, you know, that they've made no secret, you know, at the World Economic Forum, Bill Gates, the UN, that they make no secret of the fact that they want fewer people on the planet. And it's funny, because when you talk about this to your average person, they'll sort of scoff at you and call you a conspiracy theorist. But the fact is that everyone pushing this agenda, whether it's the trans issue, whether it's climate change, whether it's vaccines, they all agree on the premise that we need to get the population of the planet down. I think half a billion is the figure they kind of agree on. So,
right. That was the number from the Georgia Guidestones. So 500 yeah. million people is the sustainable. So when That's they say right. sustainable, it they also, in their their terminology, that is human people too. Human carbon, right? Human carbon emissions. So
exactly, yeah. we are the carbon that they want to reduce. So look, I can't claim to know what the intentions of the people at the top are, but you can make a reasonable inference that people who say they want to reduce the population, who sponsor programs that sterilize people and support programs that sterilize people, such as transgenderism, it's a reasonable inference to assume that the two are connected.
Right. That it's part of an agenda, a broader agenda. Yeah.
It is a reasonable assumption. And yet if you point that out to people, you get called a conspiracy theorist, and that's another example of how effective the propaganda has been.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I agree. But I think all through time, that there's a class function. The elites have always felt threatened by the teeming horde. So they've always tried ways to control them, whether send them off to war, go, you know, fight somebody else as the enemy. So this is just another means of like social control. They don't want to have to contend with these people. I mean, so I think that kind of element, there's an element of that. They don't want to have too many people.
Absolutely. And I think what you've got now is, I think this is a manifestation of fear. I think, and it began with the rise of the internet, which basically freed access to information, you know, to billions of people. And I think that the elites realized that time was running out, and that, you know, the longer this internet thing was around, the more people would become aware of certain things, you know, whether it's you know, information about the Kennedy assassination, whether it's questions about the moon landing, whether it's becoming aware of the malfeasance of companies like Pfizer and DuPont, and just learning about and having instant access to facts that they never would have heard about otherwise, because the media had been acting as gatekeepers for all of modern history. I think if you're an elite, if you're a world leader, one of these
Bilderberg or something like that.
Well, the Bilderberg folk, you know, whatever you want to call them, however you want to. We all know who they are. Let's, you know, the super rich and the super powerful. Anyone in that position with half a brain who sees that people are beginning to uncover inconvenient facts is going to start thinking about how they can solidify and consolidate their power, which up until that point had been unchallenged. So I do personally believe that we are in the midst of a global coup, which seeks to supplant Western liberal democracy with a Chinese style autocracy, you know, a social credit system. A technocracy, that's the word, you know. And they make no secret of this. You know, all you need to do is watch a few hours of the discussions that go on at the World Economic Forum when they're talking about, you know, vaccine passports, putting chips in people, you know, all the way up to actual mind control. So,
right.
Yeah.
They know about it. They know the mind war is on. Like, I mean, there are assets, these elite assets doing it. Al Gore just hammering people with climate change hysteria. Like, he's such a joke. I know people who worked on his campaign, and they just said he would, like, drone on about stupid stuff. But he's like a son of, like, he's the American aristocracy. So he plays his role. He went to the WEF and did some dumb speech. But, yeah, that's his part. That's the torch he carries. But it is interesting because you, from your perspective in Australia, you think your elections are tampered with. I know ours are tampered with in the U.S. I've talked to people in Canada who said that the election of Trudeau is super sketchy and that nobody likes him there. He has no popularity. So these are all, and then that whole thing that went down in Brazil too was fake. Somebody just pulled it, you know, that you talk about technocracy. Somebody just, you know, changed the algorithm and Lula was back in power. Yeah.
I mean, this is the problem we have with voting machines. It's the problem with mail-in voting. I mean, shit, we could do a whole podcast on this. But one thing you do notice when you look around the world, I think since Trump, and again, Trump was a manifestation of the same thing we were just talking about, like, oh shit, you know, the internet matters, you know, because Trump was elected by the internet, you know. And what came after that, the reaction to him is again, it's a manifestation of the same thing. It's the elites suddenly realizing that they didn't have the control they thought they did. So what's interesting when you look at elections around the world since Trump, something doesn't ring true about it. You see leaders being reelected who are obviously super unpopular. You see like what's happening in the UK for the last few years. They just shuffle leaders in and out of the top spot. You had Theresa May, you had Boris Johnson, you had Liz Truss. Now you've got Rishi Sunak. They're all just stooges. They're being shuffled in and out. They're not being elected. They're being, you know, they're just being appointed by whoever funds the party, you know, and we know who they are. It's Lockheed Martin and Boeing and Raytheon and BlackRock and, you know, name your massive multinational company. They've all got their fingers in it. And who sits above them? Well, we don't really know, do we? But there does appear to me to be a concerted effort across not just the West. I mean, you just mentioned Brazil, but to install into government people who are going to play ball with this globalist agenda that is coming down. It's the 2030 agenda. And they all have the exact same talking points. They all instigate the exact same policies. And what you notice about the policies is no one ever votes for them. The candidate campaigns on traditional democratic values, kitchen table values. And as soon as they get into power, they start instigating policies that nobody voted for and nobody wants. Right. And people complain about them. The politicians get voted out, they slot new ones in, and the same agenda rolls on. And
right.
It's
incredible. It's incredible here. They try to restrict Americans from finding out certain facts, but if you pull the average American, 75% want a completely different, you know, political leader for wherever they're at. That was actually the exit poll in Arizona, but it was still a 50-50 race. It was close and down to the wire, but everybody who came out of those voting things said, yeah, I want somebody else. So the numbers don't add up, at least in the States. When you say the elections are tampered with in Australia, what do you know of down there? I mean, did they have things like that happen?
I haven't had the time to do a deep dive on this. I did see video footage from one of the polling locations of one of the ballot counters. He was rubbing out, because I think they use pencils in some of the jurisdictions. He was rubbing out something on one of the ballots and then re-entering it. It's more for me, the compelling evidence I saw was from the 2020 election. I mean, I watched hours and hours of footage. You know, I watched the depositions and the testimonies that came out around. You know, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. In the States?
There's so much.
Yeah, I mean, there was.
You're not allowed to say it, though. Yeah, you're not even allowed to say it.
You're not allowed to say it. You're not allowed to say it.
Right off the big
yeah,
things.
But yeah.
And I can't talk about COVID or the stolen election. You can't talk about.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This
is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Vaccines and the election, those are the big ones. And yep. You know, that tells you something in itself. I mean, sure I've given up.
It tells you they're sensitive about it. They don't want people to realize the election was stolen. That guy has 20 million followers on Twitter, and he said Biden. And he supposedly got 81 million votes. It doesn't add up. He got the most votes in American history. Like, these are simple numbers like a fifth grader could figure out. Mommy, why does Joe Biden have 20 million followers and they got 81 million votes? How does that work, Mom? Trump actually has, like, Trump on Twitter, like, I think he used to have close to that. Like, he had the accurate number to thing. So they stole that. I mean, when he complains about the election being stolen from, it got stolen. That's why.
I think it was stolen. I think Trump won. I mean, you know, like even the one example that sticks in my mind is the truckload of ballots showing up. I think it was in Pennsylvania. They had a truckload of ballots come in from New York. And then this guy, the truck driver, was saying, you know, what am I doing unloading? What am I doing driving a truckload of election ballots at like 3 a.m. from New York to Pennsylvania and unloading them at this polling station? And, you know, like that's just the one example that sticks in my mind. But, you know, I saw the videos. So, I mean, like that's what sort of woke me up to, okay, like they do have the ability. They do have the ability to tamper with these elections. When I talk about Australia, I don't have any proof. It's a feeling, all right? And people can think what they want about that. But it's more the fact that I just see the same bastards being reelected who imposed the most draconian conditions on us during COVID. You know, Dan Andrews, who's the local guy here and he's the Premier of Victoria, he made himself so damn unpopular through the lockdowns. We're the most locked down city on the planet. I think we still hold the record for the number of days spent in lockdown. We had a curfew, we couldn't leave the house. You know, it was an interesting time.
It's incredible.
And that went on for the better part of 2 years. But you know, he was immensely unpopular. Like I said, in the summer of 2021 to 2022, we had hundreds of thousands of people in the street every weekend. And those are just the people who can be bothered giving up their Saturday to go and march around and shout in the streets. You know, if you conservatively say we represented 10% of the people who opposed this guy, you know, you're talking millions of people. And yet he still easily won the election. You look at that and you just say to yourself, something's not right here. And then you see the same party sweeping the entire country. It's the Labor Party, the Australian Labor Party, which is our version of the Democrats. They're the left-leaning ones. They're the ones who really embrace the whole trans thing, the climate change stuff. They're the ones who sort of opened the door to China. All that kind of stuff. Just think of the Biden administration. Like,
right,
they've swept the entire country. They now control the whole mainland. It's the same in New Zealand. The Labour Party, the leftists over there have taken over. It's exactly the same as Trudeau. You mentioned Trudeau before. He just seems bulletproof. And yet we know how unpopular it is. We saw what he did during the trucker protests. How do these people keep winning? How do they keep winning?
Right. So it's incredible. Uniformity across all these nation states that should be acting in different things. That's a real tell for me.
I mean, the laws of physics, the laws of, you would expect to see a certain amount of differentiation between the way that politicians act in Canada, New Zealand, Australia, France, the UK, but it's all exactly the same. The the agenda is almost identical word for word, you know. And if that's not evidence of collusion, I prefer the term conspiracy, but let's just say collusion. If that's not evidence of grand collusion, then I don't know what to tell people, you know.
Yeah, me too. And it's just a huge lack of sovereignty. Like these stolen elections, you're supposed to have, the election is to tie the people to their government. But when they're stolen, the people, the government can do whatever they want because there's no consequence. They can steal your money through massive bills. They can inflate the currency.
They can,
open the borders. It doesn't matter. They don't care because they know they're going to steal the next one and the next one. So
yeah, and I think what a lot of people miss is it's not the politicians making these calls. The politicians are the front men for much larger interests.
And they always have. They are really in the States.
They've
always been around. They've most of those big powerful families have kind of pet politicians. Like their politicians are the Rockefellers. Yeah. And so whether it's
the funny
Clinton
thing is, we all know that, you know, they make TV shows about it, you know,
right.
Like just two that spring to mind would be House of Cards and, and even in Ozark, that Netflix one, which just wrapped up recently, you know, there was a great kind of subplot in that about sort of how you can buy politicians and completely own the political system. But you know, they don't make any secret of it. It's kind of common knowledge. And yet when you talk to people about it, they give you this funny look, you know, like, oh, yeah, conspiracy theorist.
They've been conned. That's part of the mind war. That's part of the...
I actually heard that Bill Clinton said, he said House of Cards is 99% accurate.
Because it's about him and his wife, right?
From the horse's
mouth. Ozark is in Arkansas too, right? So you want to talk about somebody whose whole life was groomed, talk about Bill Clinton, supposedly the son of a barmaid who somehow goes to Georgetown and then becomes the governor of the whole state at like 28 or 29, or was he was also, and then makes it to Yale Law School, which is like, you know, a shot in the dark. Like it's like, you know, it's like hitting three bullseyes in a row to get in there. He is a privileged person. His actual real parentage is much different than what they say. He's supposedly a black, but have you heard that story? Somebody researched him. It was Christopher Hitchens researched the parentage story of Bill Clinton, and he actually realized that the person who was supposedly his dad could not have been his dad. He was a guy who died in the ditch, but he was in Europe, serving in Europe. So it was some kind of convenient cover story. The Blythe story is fake. Clinton is his stepdad's last name. So the parentage, and people have always said, is Rockefeller. One arm of the huge Rockefeller, the sons of John, one of the sons spent tons of time in, was it Springs? I can't remember. He spent time in this kind of part of Arkansas all the time, and he was very promiscuous apparently. So Bill may be, it all ties together because Bushes are all fronts for the Rockefeller family. They've always have been, and they're just part of that kind of caste system. But when George Bush Sr. died, was it 2018? I forgot what it was. Who shows up there? Bill Clinton. He showed up at like when he was passing away. So he was always part of the team, man. He was the hidden behind the throne. He always has been.
Yeah, I mean, they're all buddies. They all, you know, they all hung out on Epstein's Island, you know. It is actually very simple. It's the way the world has always been. It's an aristocracy, and we are the peasants. You know what's funny about the whole thing, and part of my awakening, if you want to call it that, was realizing that I was a peasant. You know, when I got into the system and got my job in the corporate world, and started getting my paychecks and my suits and you know, started being able to afford oysters and champagne. You know, I imagined that I was that I'd made it, and I was sort of part of something, and it was, I think, partly the realization as things began to reveal themselves to me that I was part of nothing. I was simply just another cog in their machine, and that I would never be one of them. That was one of the realizations that I think really woke me up.
It's a tough realization. I think a lot of Americans are in that spot. They know they're serfs. They know they're slaves. They cannot survive one $500 charge. So they are working like dogs. They're basically,
well, that's right. You know,
indentured servants might have been actually a better thing. An indentured servant probably had a better gig than some
at this
today,
at this right? point. They probably had more job security.
Yeah,
you know? I agree. Yeah, and this is the problem with the middle class. I think is that too many of the middle class imagine themselves to be that, you know, part of the club, and I think that's a sleight of hand that's been pulled on the middle class. And it is also what is allowing our rulers to dismantle the middle class, because as long as people still think they're part of the club, they're going to go along with the agenda, you know, and you know, which brings us back to this trans thing. You know, your biggest supporters of this woke ideology, whether it's trans or whether it's whatever it is, you know, LGBTQ, the whole gamut. You know, it comes out of the middle class. It comes out of these liberal universities. You know, these posh liberal women. You know, and I don't just mean to pick on women, but they really do sort of drive a lot of the thought. You know, in the sociology space, in the out of the universities. But let's not just pick on the women. It's let's just call it the middle class. It's interestingly, it seems to be driven. I mean, it is driven from the top, but it's enabled and amplified and legitimized by the middle class. It seems to me, and the irony in this is that it will eventually spill the destruction of the middle class, and I think that is the aim, because you can't in the same way that they want to do away with the Second Amendment, they need to do away with the middle class. And I think, you know, time and again we see that it's the US Second Amendment, the US Constitution, and we haven't had time to talk about that yet, but you're not supposed to talk about
the Constitution anymore. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about the Constitution in the United States. It's not mentioned in the public spaces, in the public commons. Nobody says the Bill of Rights anymore.
And it's very concerning. And as someone who's not from the States, you know, I can tell you, to me, it's concerning, even though I don't live there, but because the American Constitution and the Western middle class is all based on the idea that we are sovereign and that the government serves us, you know. Right. And as we watch the Constitution being eroded, you know, we slide further towards the destruction of that middle class, of an upwardly mobile class of people with means, you know, the means to engage in discourse and to develop ideas and to be something more than a wage slave who simply doesn't have the time to engage in politics. And I think that is the problem they're trying to eradicate, is that we are not part of their club and we never will be. And that makes us a threat.
They don't want us. Yeah, they don't want us.
Yeah, they don't want us. They.
So, yeah, you're absolutely right. They feel like it's a threat. It's really a class issue. I mean, I hate to go to class, but... there's a significant proportion. It's really them against us. Not that a lot of people are just sitting around like, I just want to live my life, but they don't want to let you have it, you know? So that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing with this poison kill shot. Like I'm just trying to breathe, just, you know, birth to life, but they don't want to let the average person just not be bothered with. They're just poking their thumb in their thumb in your eye. They get off on it. I think there's a larger psychology there. But that's interesting about the trans issue, too. Used to be considered mental illness. If you thought you were a man and thought you were a woman, then I think in the NSM diagnostic manual, like 20 years ago, you were mentally ill.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is this is the only form of dysphoria that is affirmed. You know, any other person who's experiencing some real dissonance, you know, that it's treated, it's not affirmed. You don't say to someone who's suicidal, well, actually they are starting to say this now. You know, like in Canada, they've got the medical assistance in dying, the MAID, they call it, you know. But so we're starting to see this, you know, this affirmation of pathology, right, when it suits the agenda. And I mean, the trans issue is the most obvious manifestation of that. I feel like we haven't spoken enough about it. We kind of got sidetracked, but I mean, there's, okay, with the trans thing, I feel the establishment has identified an issue which really allows them to completely bamboozle people. You know, it's like they've distilled the absurdity of the whole oppression narrative down to a really pure form. You know, they've created the ultimate victim class, which cannot be criticized, and it's a control mechanism, and it's almost like through this tiny kind of insignificant sliver of the population, that it's like, right, through this they can create complete obedience. And it's like the more absurd it gets, the smaller the segment of the victim class becomes, it's like the more power it gives them. And I'm still trying to formulate this, you know, in my head, but it feels to me like that they've found the magic ring, you know. And through this narrative that they believe they can achieve complete submission, because as we spoke about it at the beginning, if you can get people to fundamentally deny not just reality, but the most fundamental aspect of reality, which is life itself. Life itself is the existence of males and females. Without that differentiation, without the physical reality of our two different genders, there is no life. So when you can get people to deny the fundamental cornerstone of life itself, then you have them. You control them completely. And you know, I had a whole lot of quotes from 1984 here that I wanted to reference, but you know, there's just
it
so
is
much.
1984. Yeah, there's, I mean, it's really there. You're in this kind of crazy environment, and it's changing the culture, the politics. Yeah.
And the thing is, they don't want to destroy us. They want to convert us. And this is if I can just read from
please do
part three of 1984, please do. O'Brien has Winston, who in room 101, which is the torture chamber in the Ministry of Love. And he says to Winston, why do you imagine that we bring people to this place? And Winston says, to make them confess. And O'Brien says, no, that's not the reason. Try again. Winston says, to punish them. O'Brien becomes almost incensed at this. And he says, no. And his voice changed extraordinarily, and his face became suddenly both stern and animated. No, not merely to extract your confession, not to punish you. Shall I tell you why we have brought you here? To cure you, to make you sane. So they know that by throwing us in jail, they make martyrs of people, you know. So they need people to believe in this stuff, you know. They need, you know, in Orwell's words, to cure us of our wrong think. You know, they demand that, and that's why people, it is so important that people say the words. You know, they're always trying to get people to affirm the stuff, you know.
Right.
It's like, you must affirm this person's trans journey. And that's the tell, you know, that they don't want you to say it because you feel like you have to say it. They want you to affirm it, which means that they essentially want you to believe. They want to cure you and make you think as they do.
Right. Even though they may actually not even think it, they just know that it's a control mechanism, right?
Yeah.
They may know full well that there's two genders. They're just, this is like, that's like the whole.
And this is where the double thing comes in. That, you know, it's the ability to hold two completely opposite, contradictory beliefs simultaneously.
It's incredible times. It really is. And it's only getting worse. So I hope people, you know, realize how bad it's getting. JJ, we're at the 50-minute mark. Is there anything? I mean, I think that's a great way to summarize our whole talk. But where can people find your stuff?
Well, the best place to go is my Substack. So as you said at the start, that's jjdawson.substack.com. Yes, JJ Dawson, spelled DAWSON, at Substack.com. Substack.com. And I'm also on Twitter at RealJJDawson. So, I mean, you know, I'd love for any of your listeners to give me a follow and join the conversation. You know, this is it's only sort of, I'm just through my first year of this endeavor. So sort of hoping to build it out really over the next decade and hopefully get out of the corporate machine and with any luck become self-sufficient so that I'm not reliant on that big BlackRock money and you know, all the influence that flows down I don't work for BlackRock, by the way. Let me clarify that. But basically, any publicly listed company is basically owned by BlackRock. So
they have a huge slug of stock. They have slug all. They're influential throughout the entire U.S. corporate America. It's incredible.
That's right.
And they never disclose who owns that stock either, by the way.
No. So, I mean, you know, I need to get out of that machine. And
it's like you end up being like just like Winston working in some cog where you got to be careful what you think and what you see. And I mean, it's really 1984. I mean, I know people are trying to educate them out. Yeah.
But exactly Substack
is getting more readers, I think, like on a level of like 10 times over the standard newspapers in the world. Like they're just, their numbers are just off the charts because people just,
it's incredible. It's,
yeah, they
it's,
want
it's
people to hear their authentic and, you know, voice of integrity, just talking about issues, not some corporate hack who has to put up with this stuff. But anyway, that's a whole nother show. JJ, thanks for the talk. Thanks for writing this article as well. And
William, I want to thank you for having me on. It's been great talking and I've been enjoying checking out some of your work and I look forward to following you more closely in the future. And maybe we can talk again sometime.
Love to. Sounds great. Thanks so much again, JJ Dawson. Check out this article. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. Title is "The Trans Issue is Not a Petty Culture War Clash. It is Everything." JJ Dawson, thanks so much.
Thanks, William. All the best.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.